Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So we had TJ Miller in studio a few weeks ago. I guess it was in March, right?
It was
like 3 weeks ago, I want to say.
I think it was the day of the first or second day of the tournament.
And apparently, when he was leaving his gig, he did like a weekend bit, right?
He was at Arlington Cinema Draft House.
He called a 911 dispatcher in New Jersey on March 18th and reported that he was on Amtrak train 2256 traveling from D.C. towards Penn Station, New York City with a female passenger who he said had a bomb in her bag.
It sounded like he must have gotten into some sort of confrontation with a woman on the train. And I guess his way of getting back at her or messing with her was to call in a phony bomb threat, which authorities don't take lightly.
Oh, so that wasn't someone he was traveling with. Wasn't a friend.
I don't believe so.
I'm not sure. He was on a different train, but they just arrested him like on Monday because I think he called from his phone. So they tracked it. You know, he was hammered. I think they asked
him. What
time
of the day was this? Does it say what train he took? Had to have been an afternoon.
I don't know. I think it was Sunday evening.
All right. It was Sunday after he did his final show?
He described the woman as having red hair and a red scarf and carrying a black bag, carry-on suitcase with a handle. He said she kept checking her bag without taking anything out, kept asking first-class attendant what the next stop was, and seemed to want to get off the train and leave her bag behind. At some point, the officer detected slurring in his voice because he was probably hammered and asked him if he had consumed any alcohol that day. He replied he had one glass of red wine. Then they asked him if he suffered from mental illness.
Right.
And he said, no, absolutely not. This is the first time I've ever made a call like this before. I'm worried for everyone on that train. Someone has to check that lady out.
Okay.
I like that he's vigilant with terrorism angle. I kind of like that.
Is there any chance?
What if he legitimately feared the worst?
Exactly. What if he was just drunk, but he legitimately
thought?
Well,
he was definitely drunk.
100%.
But what if he actually thought that she was acting so weird that she might have something in the bag?
You know what?
Drabby?
The paranoid side of me?
He's probably paranoid, like doing weed. Right?
The paranoid side of me is kind of on TJ Miller's side here. On this one.
See, when I first read the story, actually, Drab is the one who texted me. Then I read the story, I thought, oh, he was just hammered and just being stupid comedian.
Right.
Because that's what he does. I mean,
you here when he was here?
No, I was away, remember?
He was very charismatic, super engaging.
But if you've seen any of his movies, he's just a goofball.
Right.
He walks like a big donk.
Yeah, he's just go watch Office Christmas Party.
Yeah. He's a big dude.
All he does is F around.
Yep.
So that's what I thought it was, but maybe, Drabby. I'm just giving him the benefit of the doubt here.
I mean, all of the public service messages that you see post 9/11 are...
You see something, say something.
See something, say something. Maybe he legitimately thought she was trying to blow up the train.
Sorry, so
he got into some sort of spat
more details
with her and just was messing with her.
All right, more details.
Investigators later determined that Miller had actually been traveling on a different train than he initially reported. An attendant from the first-class car where Miller had been sitting said Miller appeared intoxicated when he boarded in Washington, shocker, consumed multiple drinks on the train, and was removed to New York because of intoxication.
Right.
The attendant also told investigators that Miller had been involved in a hostile exchange with a woman who was sitting in a different row from him in the first-class car.
That's what Cakes is saying.
See, that's where the fuse was lit, so to speak.
So, all right, so maybe now I'm flipping the script.
Right.
He was so bitter. He was drunk, and he was bitter. His emotions
salty.
Are running high.
Yeah.
He's pissed
he said,
at
I'm
this
get
woman.
Back
they
at this
say
woman.
That Miller, motivated by a grudge against the female, called 911 to relay false information about a suspected bomb at the train.
Now, what he didn't tell the cops when he said, yes, I had one glass of wine, was that the glass was 80 ounces large.
Yeah, exactly.
So, look,
the
nice
glass
guy,
was the size of a bottle.
Yeah. My exchange with him was much different than the one this woman apparently had. He couldn't have been nicer to us when he was in studio.
Did the investigators ever, did the police ever track down the woman? Did they inspect the woman's bag?
I don't know.
Well, he didn't even know, he was changing the way she looked.
Yeah, yeah.
When they were, you know, pressing him on it.
He didn't know, right?
He goes, she has brown hair. Then he said she had red hair.
Yeah.
This is the TJ Miller that we all thought we were going to get in studio that we were right. worried about. That he was going to be a disaster.
I just thought he was going to be a jerk.
The bomb
everyone.
Squad did board the train and search the train and found no explosives.
Oh, so they did. All right.
Oh, yeah. It was a whole big thing.
So now he's looking at 5 years. Now, he's not going to get that.
He's not going to get 5 years.
He's going to get something. Because you can't mess around like that. You're wasting the...
I know. I understand. They take it very seriously. But they also have to factor in he was hammered.
Well, they will, but he's...
And he pulled the old move where if you ever get pulled over by a cop, people always lie when the cop asks how much have you had to drink. You're always going to say, I had one beer or I had two beers when you've had 12.
I still advise that. I mean, don't drink and drive. But
of course not.
If I was his attorney, I would just tell the judge, look, Your Honor, just go watch Office Christmas Party.
Right.
And you'll understand what we're
go
dealing
watch
with.
She's out of my league. I mean, his
you'll
name,
understand what we're dealing
his
with.
His name and She's Out of My League is Stainer.
Right.
Okay? That's who we're dealing with.
I mean, he's just a goof, and he was hammered, and I don't know. I'm sure he'll get some sort of a penalty, but it's not going to be 5 years.
Look, I'm not about making false bomb threats, but even in the light of all these allegations, sorry, I'm still team TJ Miller.
So am I.
I like him. I
just like
TJ
Miller.
I've been won over.
Drabby, he's a donk. What do you give
a donk?
What do you give a donk? What's the sentence for a donk?
Well, here's the problem. I think Hollywood's turning on him, even though he's a big silly. He's in Ready Player One, one of the stars of that film.
He's one of the stars of that film?
He's got a big role.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a voiceover, but... Okay.
Big role in Deadpool and Deadpool 2.
Deadpool 2.
Right.
He's a massive star.
He's a big star.
And
right.
I think everyone in Hollywood hates him. AWOD's smarter than him, though. He might.
Why?
Well, I mean.
AWOD wouldn't do that.
AWOD's not dumb enough to call the police from his cell phone.
Yeah, but
report a bomb.
He's got a substance abuse. He's got some issues. He's
right,
he's an alcoholic.
There's a lot of people that have drinking problems that don't. You know,
okay. Agreed.
Have assault claims.
I think it's interesting that the operator asked him if he was mentally ill. I mean, that's how crazy he sounded.
He's just a hee-haw.
He's a big old hee-haw.
Well, what do you do for a hee-haw? I don't know. I can't give that guy a year or 2 years.
That's why they need stupidity jail.
I actually think he needs
exactly.
I think he needs to go
30
away.
Days?
Wake-up call.
30 days?
I think he needs a wake-up call.
All right, if you want to give him 30 days.
He attacked like an Uber driver or whatever he did. Right?
That's a legend. You can't prove anything.
What do you mean a leg? I mean, that's a matter of public record.
He's got to lay off.
I saw the headline.
He's got to lay off
it.
The Merlot. That's what he's got to lay off of.
Stand up with butt funny.
And it was right. It was,
oh, I bet
right
it was.
Off, it was right off the heels of his Junks appearance. He came in here. Was it a Friday? Yeah. Thursday or Friday.
Yeah.
Does his gigs at the Draft House, and then 2 days later, he's calling it
bomb
hoaxes.
The day before he came in studio, he settled with the Uber driver.
Right.
All right, so I guess it's not a legend.
It's not a legend. It's
he did.
Matter of public record.
That's a big check.
But the question is, he's a hee-haw. What do you give a hee-haw in terms of a sentence for something stupid when he was under the influence?
At least 3 months.
Three months?
You got to go to prison for a while.
You got
to
go.
3 months?
You got to go.
That's too
long. It is
an
elaborate ruse.
That's too long.
When I first read the story, I thought he just said something, made up, you know, one of those dummies that made a comment about a bomb at TSA or something. That's what I first
Oh, like the Packers wide receiver, that bit?
Yeah.
Did you see what
that's
he did?
That's what I thought
hey,
it was.
Big dummy.
I think his name is Trevor Davis. He was about to board a flight. I think it was at LAX. And, of course, when he's checking in, they're asking him the standard questions. You know, do you have any sort of, you know, contraband or illegal weapons, whatever? And he turns to his girlfriend and audibly says, honey, did we pack the explosives?
Right.
And the person says, oh, you're going to make a bomb funny?
Right.
I'm calling the cops. Arrested him on the spot.
Yeah, you don't mess around
stupid.
With that. Again, just a hee-haw.
Hee-haw jail.
But you know what? How much jail time did Dante Stallworth get in his drunk driving where he killed the person?
He killed a person.
Like 30 days.
30 days.
Or something.
You got 30 days.
I know, but that shouldn't be the standard. That's the outlier.
But you can't give TJ Miller 3 months.
You got to get.
But if you do, you have to send him to
because he's a repeat offender. Here's the problem.
You have to send him to actor jail. Like actor / celebrity / athlete jail.
Pete Rose prison?
Yeah, but it's federal charge. They don't mess around with federal charges.
Well, that's the thing. Federal charges usually serve most of it. Right?
Yeah.
I think
90% or more.
I think he needs a wake up call. I think he's a massive dog.
We'll call Tom Mooney and see what he thinks he's going to get.
Yeah, you should ask him. Yeah. Ask him what the sentencing guidelines are going to be.
Thomas
T.J. Miller.
I'm going to text him right now.
If it was in PG County, we'd get him off.
Yeah, say if the train was in PG County, yes, should hire him.
Right. I mean, it's right over the line into D.C. Right. Pretty close.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're happy to welcome in on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, Dan Orlovsky. Played quarterback for 12 years in the NFL. You can check out his Backup Plan podcast on Twitter, at Backup Plan Pod. It's Dan Orlovsky. What's up, Dan? Thanks for joining us.
What's going on, guys? Yeah, good to be here, man.
Dan played with an old friend of ours, Randy Etzel, at UConn for
entire... Oh, really?
Yeah, we were tight with Randy for a while.
He's a good dude.
Yeah. I've heard some stories about you guys and your guys' relationship. So Randy, he was the guy who got me to go to UConn. Somehow got me up to Storrs, Connecticut. So he's a guy that I hold in high regard.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from actually Fairfield County, Connecticut. You know, about an hour from Storrs, but still, to get someone to go to Storrs is pretty impressive.
Right?
You think you'll be able to get it going again?
There's obviously unique challenges now. I mean, back in the day when he sat in my living room, he said, "Hey, Dan, do you want to go play in the Big East against Miami and Virginia Tech and Boston College and so on?" And now it's, you know, I think there's a real challenge to go into living rooms and go, "Hey, do you guys want to go down to play against Tulsa?" You know, so yeah. I think that'll be a little bit more difficult than it was in the past, but we're certainly hopeful.
Dan, I've never been to Storrs, Connecticut, but you're making it sound like it's Afghanistan. Is it really like that bad to be at Storrs?
Middle of nowhere.
First of all, the weather for 6 months of the year is not in your favor, and then there's just not a lot to do. I mean, it's not a campus town where you can go off campus and there's a bunch to do. Now, campus has grown a little bit, but once you're on campus, you're on campus, and there's no reason for you to leave it, but that's not a good thing because it's not like it's Madison, Wisconsin, and there's, you know, a ton of things going on.
Yeah. All right, so we brought you on to kind of talk about these quarterbacks in the draft, and, you know, there's a bunch of really good ones. You know, who knows how it translates to the next level. You know, Rosen thinks he's going to be the greatest quarterback ever. But let's start with Rosen. When you watch Rosen on tape, Josh Rosen from UCLA, what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two things that stand out, I mean, everyone talks about how he's refined and that matters. It does. But I love the fact that he does all the little things. And playing quarterback in the NFL, if you can't do the little things, which are your feet, the rhythm that you play with, every quarterback in the NFL that's accurate plays with great rhythm. And so he plays with fantastic rhythm. So those little things equal big things. And then the second thing is we live in the golden era quarterback-wise when it comes to your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, defenses are more intricate. They disguise more. They send more exotic stuff. The offenses ask quarterbacks to do more and gather more information. And so his mind is so far advanced than really so many guys that come out of college. He's got such a distinct advantage, and so does the team who drafts him, because then – your playbook becomes bigger. The things that you can do become more. And so for that, it's he's coming. He does everything you want at the quarterback position when it comes to NFL football.
Does it bother you at all that he's got that bravado, that he's got the cockiness? I guess it wouldn't bother me. No. But I'm just wondering if it bothers a former quarterback.
No, not at all. I think you'd rather have it. You'd rather have a guy that you got to, you know, rein in than a guy that you got to push. Because – here's the thing. You're asking these guys to – basically, there's $32 billion companies in the NFL, and you're asking one of these guys to go be the CEO of your billion-dollar company. I can't imagine there's a ton of super successful CEOs that don't have a little ego, a little stuff in their neck, and because everything falls on them. And so you've got to have a guy that wants that. And the other thing is – he was the prized recruit coming into UCLA. He was the big thing in high school. He goes to UCLA and he's the big deal. He's never really had somebody to kind of show him that we all mature by watching someone before us. And we all learn from that. And I just think if he has the opportunity just to have someone there with him that's a little bit older, a little bit more mature, maybe have done it in the past, then you go, I want to marry these guys together, because whatever that little flaw is that, you know, the maybe he's too egotistical, whatever that is, I could rein that, I could pull that in just a little bit with some help.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, I looked at one of the videos at Dan Orlovsky 7 that you posted on April 9th about Josh Allen, the quarterback coming out of Wyoming. And you said there's a difference between being a thrower and playing quarterback in the NFL. His accuracy doesn't concern you, but this does. Take us through that tape, the analysis of Josh Allen, and would you have pause drafting him at number one overall if you're the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, so listen, I was in the NFL for 12 years. I saw tons of guys come through that can absolutely throw the ball, flat out spin it. I mean, if you look at the top 10 guys in the NFL at the quarterback position over the last 3 or 4 years, no one's going to like wow you with how they throw the football. You know, Rodgers maybe, but I've seen him have pedestrian throws on a consistent basis. So the point was, quarterbacking is everything else but throwing. That's the given. You got to throw.
Right.
Quarterbacking is everything else but. And so on the clip, you know, Oregon is the team that they're playing, and the Will linebacker at the snap of the ball blitzes. And it's a basic protection, and it's a very easy blitz to see. And the ball snapped in the shotgun. Josh Allen catches it, and it almost looks like he's surprised that the linebacker can move, like literally move. And the reaction shows me, well, he had no plan of knowing, okay, this is my protection. Because as a quarterback, you have to go to line of scrimmage and no problems. You have to be a problem solver. And so when this protection's called, you have to go, okay, these are my two problems. Oh, if that Will linebacker blitzes, I have to have an answer. And so the backer blitzes, Josh Allen looks like surprised. Meanwhile, the running back is looking for the ball. He looks right away. Once he sees the linebacker blitz, he snaps his head back to Josh Allen, like, give me the ball. And Josh Allen, you know, tries to spin out of it. He makes the linebacker miss and launches the ball downfield, almost picked off. But, you know, you've got to have a plan and a process at the line of scrimmage every single play, because as a defensive coordinator in the NFL, if a team takes Josh Allen one and I see that on tape, I'm bringing Star Wars at you, you know, because if you can't handle one guy, I'm bringing it from all over the place. And so that's just a very difficult thing to go teach. I've been around guys who could do it on paper and then on the board and even in a walkthrough on the field.
Yeah.
But when the bullets got live, it's a whole different world.
Give us some names. So, give us some big names through the years. Man.
I was in Tampa with a guy named Josh Freeman, and a really young and up-and-coming quarterback, had done some good things, but he could not get that part of the game at the line of scrimmage, handling the bad. He couldn't understand it, and it paralyzed him in a way, and that's what held him back. That he was good. He had some decent moments, but if you're the Browns and you're picking one, is that what you want? Do you want a guy who's going to be good or okay, or do you want a guy who's going to change your franchise? And it's just not a trait you can easily teach a guy, because everything in the NFL happens faster.
Right. I mean, it's like a fatal flaw.
Well, like you said, when you were watching the Oregon tape, I mean, obviously those players are better than the kids at New Mexico and the kids at Colorado State. I mean, he was terrible in that Oregon game. He was terrible in the Iowa game. But those are better players. Those are better players.
And another thing for me with him, and I've said this over the past couple months, if you look at all the quarterbacks that have come into the NFL from small schools that have dominated, or that have gone to be good players in the NFL, you know, Steve McNair, Dante Culpepper, Roethlisberger, Flacco,
Carson Wentz,
Tony Romo. Yeah, Carson Wentz. They all flat out dominated at the level they were at. They were dominant. Why has Josh Allen never dominated at Wyoming?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
You got to ask yourself that. You have to ask yourself that.
Yeah, he had a much better year 2 years ago than last year. All right, Sam Darnold at USC. Big kid, 6'4", 230 pounds, 235, big arm. Had some interception issues this past year, but, you know, he's got all the characteristics of a superstar if he can get in the right system. What do you like about Sam?
Yeah, I flat out love his game. You know, when if you're a team and you're looking to find a guy early that's, man, this guy's going to be a great player for us, or we hope so, you have to find traits that are going to, one, allow him to be great, and then, two, what are the flaws? You know, what are the warts that you have to clean up? So Sam does three things that you can't coach that can make him great. One, he's got this magical sloppiness to his game where everything he does is just a little bit sloppy. It's like Romo and Roethlisberger morphed together. And sometimes that sloppy leads to bad things. It does. But it also leads to incredible magic that I can't coach. You cannot coach that in a guy. The second thing is he's got the really good ability to judge the angles and speeds on how receivers are going to run their routes. And that matters because everything in the NFL happens faster. The windows are smaller. You've got to throw with anticipation. Again, not something you could teach a quarterback. And the third thing, he can be accurate with bad feet, which is really special because I'm not going to teach you to be accurate with bad feet because I'm teaching bad habits. But all those things, like the bad feet, I could coach you. I could refine that more. I could coach you. I have drills to get you to have better feet. The turnovers don't bother me. You know, would you guys think Matt Ryan is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL?
Certainly.
He threw 19 picks his last year coming out of Boston College. Russell Wilson, his junior year, 14. Tony Romo, 16. Mm-hmm. So where did the turnovers come from? How did they happen? You know, the fumbles. I was in Detroit with Matthew Stafford in 2014 when he had 10 fumbles. He emphasized it. We worked on it. He had two in 2015. So that stuff, you can fix those warts. There's medicine for that stuff in regards to Sam Darnold. But that's why I like him so much more, because the stuff that he does bad or flaws is fixable.
What about Baker Mayfield? I'm so intrigued by this kid.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield's like, it's hard for me to sit there and have somebody tell me why I shouldn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for, point out, you're going to tell me all this off the field stuff. We all did ignorant stuff at 21. I just didn't do it in the Twitter era. And I think he's so much more Tom Brady and Philip Rivers on the field than he is whoever else he gets compared to. And my biggest concern with Baker Mayfield is that his greatest strength, competitiveness. Is his competitiveness his greatest strength? Because in the NFL, that only take you so far. You at some point, you need to flat out play. Now, watching his tape, you love 99.9% of the stuff that he does. I mean, he's a significantly better thrower than anybody gives him credit for. He's the best deep ball thrower in the draft, and that matters in the NFL because you only get three shots a game. You only get three or four balls that go down the field a game, and they're so impactful to the outcome. And you can't be the, oh, man, we just missed that one. Oh, you've got to be able to hit it. And so deep ball accuracy is a really important trait. I think that he needs to be put in the right – like, you could put Josh Rosen from UCLA in a bunch of different systems. He'll be good. Baker needs to be in the right system. You need to move his launch point a bunch. Just like Seattle's done with Russell or Drew Brees in New Orleans, you know, you got to find out, one, can we move his launch point a bunch with our offense? And two, will he be obsessed with his craft? Because that's what has afforded Drew Brees and Russell Wilson to overcome the height deficiency. They've become obsessed with their craft. And if Baker Mayfield has that, man, again, it's hard for me not to take him.
All right, so how do you rank those four that we just talked about? Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Mayfield.
I think it's Darnold, Rosen by a pretty good amount.
Okay.
And then I think it's Baker, Mayfield, and Josh Allen, I'll put that four, but Lamar Jackson's in the conversation for me.
Really? Huh.
I read you were kind of trashing Lamar just because he uses his feet so much, and that's not really what's sustainable at the next level.
No, that's just people saying nonsense. This is my comment about Lamar Jackson. His greatest strength is his athleticism. It's far and away what he does best.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to hold that against him. But a team in the NFL, if you take Lamar Jackson, you can't ask him not to be him. You can't try and rein in his athleticism because it's the best thing he does. That's like telling Allen Iverson, hey, you can go play in the NBA, but no crossover.
Right,
you're taking away his greatest strength. And so if you're going to take Lamar and make him your guy, it changes everything you do as an organization because he's going to get hurt. If he runs around in the NFL like he does in college, he will get hurt. So your backup can't just be a guy. You know, for me, I couldn't be your backup because I was just the guy you can get by with. You need to have the 33rd best quarterback in the NFL. That's number one. Two, you're not going to run an offense that's traditional to the NFL. So it changes the way you scout. You need to be spread out more. Are you going to have an inline blocking tight end on your team? No. So it just changes everything. So that was my thing was, if you're going to take him, don't ask him to be somebody he's not, but you better have a really strong plan A type situation. Mm.
Dan, great thanks stuff, so much man. For the time, man. Really awesome stuff. People should go watch the film breakdowns at Dan Orlovsky 7 and check out the Backup Plan podcast at Backup Plan Pod on Twitter. Thanks. We'll have to get you on again soon.
Yeah, it's really good stuff.
Yeah,
thank you,
for
buddy.
Sure. Thank you.
Appreciate
thank
it, bro. You.
Yeah, that was really Dan good. Orlovsky, played 12 years in the NFL.
He was
backed
great.
Up a lot of really good quarterbacks.
He was actually great.
He's very
he's
good.
Really good. Yeah.
And his film breakdowns are awesome, so go check those out. He's a senior NHL writer at ESPN, co-host of the At Puck Soup podcast. What's up, Greg? How are you this morning?
How you doing, boy? It's been a long time, and it's obviously time to talk some playoff hockey.
Oh, I can't
which
wait.
Is a range of emotions for all of us. Excitement, apprehension,
fear,
depression potentially.
Fear.
Desperation.
Yeah, but you know what? It's also a great time to bet on games.
It is.
Because every game is huge.
When's it not a great time for you to bet? You bet every day.
That's a question. Good question.
It's a great question. So, Greg, I was looking at your Stanley Cup playoff hype rankings on ESPN. You have the Caps Blue Jackets as your fifth out of eight series that are upcoming. Talk about this series that the puck drops tomorrow in D.C. Jackets have never won a playoff series. I said this about half an hour ago on the show. I think if the Caps somehow stub their toe and lose to the Blue Jackets, it's going to cost Barry Trotz his job. What's your take on that? And give us your overall view on the series.
Oh, I would say that if they don't get to a championship round, it'll cost Barry Trotz his job. I mean, I think that's where the bar is now for this franchise and at this point in Trotz's tenure with the team. As far as the series goes, like you said, it's a fascinating one. I mean, you know, we have a Capitals team that has shown they can get through the first round and then finding problems after that typically. And you have a Blue Jackets team that is a different group than has been in the playoffs before. I mean, they've never had an offensive weapon the likes of Artemi Panarin, who, if it weren't for the most crowded field I can remember as a voter, might be getting more Hart Trophy MVP consideration than he has this year. And the really intriguing thing to me about the Blue Jackets is this. Like, Capitals fans understand the concept of not being able to play well against the Penguins and having that frame your entire existence as a playoff performer. To me, that's Sergei Bobrovsky, their goalie. Like, regular season, without question, one of the best goalies in hockey, might be a Vezina finalist again this year. But he's played the Penguins three times in the playoffs. He's gotten smoked each time. So the big question for me is whether he's just not a good playoff goalie or if it's more of a Penguins problem. And if it's a Penguins problem, that's bad news for the Capitals because Bobrovsky can win games on his own.
And Greg, we also know, looking at his splits in his career, he also has a Washington Capitals problem. He gives up more goals against the Caps than against any other opponent in the league. So not only does he have a Pens problem, he's got a Caps problem too. And for Caps fans, hopefully that carries over into the series.
Yeah, he needs to stop playing teams with really good Russian guys, apparently.
Right.
That's the real key. Yeah. Like, Malkin, Ovechkin, just get away from him. Go play a team that's got no Russians. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a thing, too. And you know, there's always a debate about whether regular season stats like that should carry over. And when it comes to goalies, I kind of do pay it some mind. I mean, you think about the final last year when the Predators played the Penguins, and all of a sudden this stat comes up where Pekka Rene, who's one of the best goalies in the world, traditionally in the regular season could never win in Pittsburgh, and lo and behold, what happened? What cost the Predators the cup? Pekka Rene couldn't play in Pittsburgh. So sometimes these trends do tend to stick, even though they're in the regular season.
Greg, Barry Trotz had a big decision to make, who to start in goal for game one. It was public yesterday. Philip Grubauer gets the nod. Were you team Holtby or Grubauer? Grubauer's been outstanding since late October. His numbers have been great.
I was team Holtby, but not based on merit. Like, I mean, clearly on merit, Grubauer deserves the crease to start these playoffs and, you know, becomes sort of a situation that we see in Jersey now where Keith Kincaid, the backup, gets them into the playoffs and Corey Schneider, the starter, is on the bench watching all this happen. But to me, like, the only way you're getting the confidence of Holtby back up and get him locked into a playoff mode is to give him the first two starts on home ice and then get his head in the right place. Like, if Grubauer falters and you have to go back to Holtby, I mean, I just don't know how you do that. I don't know how you go back to a guy that basically has the yips and has been told you're not playing well enough to be our playoff starter and then be like, bail us out. Like, I just don't know if that's really the right play. But, you know, this is the kind of decision a coach who is facing, you know, who's staring into the abyss about his own employment makes, which is to play the hot hand. And, you know, just goes to show you as well that, like, in the pantheon of Capitals playoff losses, all of this has happened before and all of this will happen again. I mean, this is like Jose Theodore and Varlamov all over again, right?
Yeah. Well, Drab, what was the stat you gave us about Holtby's playoff or save percentage in the playoffs?
I think he's second all-time in playoff save percentage.
Second all-time. Now, I know he hadn't played as well as Grubby, but he's second all-time in playoff percentage. I mean, I think Holtby is, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I was going to say my theory on this, though, is that it's the long game. Like, I really think that, you know, we keep on coming back to the Penguins, but it's just impossible not to. I mean, if you look at the long game and assume that the Penguins get past the Flyers and assume that the Capitals, you know, beat the Blue Jackets, which is what obviously the Capitals coaching staff has to do, then you're thinking to yourself, okay, now how do we get past the Penguins this time? And I think the long game answer is you change up something significant from the last two times you faced them, and that would be Braden Holtby. So I think I would not be shocked if part of this decision was to look ahead to the second round and the possibility of seeing the Penguins again and saying to yourself, if we can get Grubauer going, if he can be our guy, now all of a sudden we've changed something. We've changed an ingredient in the formula that hasn't produced success in the last two seasons. And I would not be shocked if that entered into their thinking.
Joined by Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer at ESPN. I'm fully expecting minimum six games, possibly seven, between the Capitals and the Blue Jackets. You don't think this is going to be a short series, do you?
No, it's going to be a long series, as every meeting, almost every meeting between John Tortorella and the Washington Capitals seems to be. I mean, unless Bobrovsky turns into a pumpkin in the first three games of the series, and this whole thing's done, because they win and lose based on that goalie. But I think it's going to be a long series for sure, and it could be a pretty brutal series. The Blue Jackets do play a manner of hockey that reflects that of their coach, and they're kind of a hard-hitting, brutal team. And it should be a fun series, too. I mean, like I said, I think the Blue Jackets have a bit more firepower than they've had in previous seasons, and we all know what the Capitals can be capable of offensively. Maybe not the track meet that we had last year with the Maple Leafs, but a pretty exciting series, I think, overall.
Do you give Columbus any chance to win the series?
I'd say Columbus is going to win the series, to be honest with you. I hate saying that, and hopefully I'm wrong, because I honestly, you know, there's nothing outside of my beloved New Jersey Devils winning another cup. There's nothing I want more in this postseason than Ovechkin getting his ring, just so everybody can just shut up about it finally. But I don't know if this is the best matchup for the Caps. I mean, this is a Blue Jackets team that you can say is due for a playoff victory at some point. I think Panarin really does reset the lineup in a significant way, and I'm wagering on Bobrovsky bucking those two trends, the Capitals trend and the playoffs trend, to play the kind of playoff series they've been waiting for him to play. And if he doesn't, then I don't quite know how they approach it again. Like, you know, if your franchise goalie can't win in the most important part of the season, I don't know what you got exactly, you know. But I'm picking him in this series, and I want to be wrong, and I don't want to be wrong on a level of being wrong about this series and then being wrong about the Penguins series and having the Penguins go out in the first round. And having the thing happen that I've said is the only thing that needs to happen for the Capitals to win the Cup, which is to have someone clear the road of Pittsburgh in the semifinal round. And that could happen this year. It's a really weird year. Like, you could make a case that all four top seeds in the Eastern Conference, the Lightning, the Capitals, the Penguins, and the Bruins, could all go out in the first round. Like, there's a legit case to be made in each of those series that the underdog wins.
So let's say your doomsday scenario happens. The Caps are eliminated in the first round. Where does Brian McClellan and the Caps brain trust go from there? Because, you know, people were writing Ovi's obituary last year after he only scored 33 goals. He roars back, has 49 this year, has an amazing season, and then they get eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. I just don't know where you go as a franchise after that.
Well, you know, you have some decisions to make, and one of them is about John Carlson and figuring out if you want to spend the money to retain him or maybe go in a different direction on your blue line. And then you have to make a decision maybe on Braden Holtby as well. I mean, there's clearly the opportunity here with a number of teams in this league looking for goaltending help and looking for a player of that ilk to really make a killing if you're looking to move a guy who's an established starter and considered to be one of the best net miners in the league. So, look, it's I thought they were done after last year, after we're all in on Shattenkirk, and then McClellan saying, well, we took our shot. And then lo and behold, they're back again. They're always going to be back again. It's just a matter of what approach they take. And next year could very well be new goalie, new head coach, and a different look on the blue line if somebody decides to give Carlson insane money.
Hmm. What would you do with Carlson?
I wouldn't give him insane money, to be honest with you. Like, I think Carlson's great, and I think he deserves to get recognition for the Norris Trophy this year. But if someone's going to blow the Capitals out of the water with an offer for him, to be a top pair. Like if the Oilers come calling and give him a ridiculous contract, I mean, there's got to be a way to rethink it. And maybe the rethinking it part is to go out and accept the fact that Ovechkin and Backstrom are in their primes and that time, but time is short, and try to find a way to extract Erik Karlsson from the Ottawa Senators. Like, you know, if you're going to tell me, if you're going to ask me which Karlsson I'd spend money on, it ain't going to be John in that scenario.
All right, so there's three series that start tonight. Minnesota plays Winnipeg, Philly plays Pittsburgh, and the Kings play in Vegas. Someone who knows hockey a lot more than I do said that the Winnipeg Jets is a good bet to beat the Wild in this series. And then give me your thoughts on the Flyers-Pens, because I just put $100 on the Pens to win the series.
I'd be legit shocked if the Wild win. Like, there's only two series in the playoffs right now where if the underdog won, I'd be shocked, and it's the Wild over the Jets and the Avalanche over the Predators, which would be a Canadiens over Washington level upset in the first round, considering how good the Predators are. So yeah, I think the Jets are a safe bet. As far as the Penguins go, I just think that, man, like, you know, three good lines on Pittsburgh, a defense that's just kind of been holding it together. Matt Murray's had a really, you know, troubling year, his injury riddled, and then a lot of off the ice stuff with him too. But, you know, he's a competent playoff performer, although he doesn't have the safety net of Marc-Andre Fleury there anymore. I still think that the Penguins are good enough to get through this first round. I'm not buying into the idea they can three-peat, but I also think that, like, you know, Philadelphia Flyers, Claude Giroux having an MVP season, and Sidney Crosby across the ice looking at all of this happening and wanting to ruin their fun is always a formula for the Penguins to succeed against their arch rivals.
Who do you think wins the Boston-Toronto series?
I got the Leafs. I got the Leafs in six. Toronto's three top lines are really, really good. Since Austin Matthews came back in their lineup after being injured, they've been just rolling teams. The concern is that their defense isn't so good, and they give up a lot of shots on goal. I still think they're a team that's like two defensemen away from really being a cup contender. But I think Freddie Anderson, their goalie, as every Capital fan saw last year, good enough to handle the shot volume and probably good enough to win the series. I get scared when there's this weird consensus around one team, and that's what's happened with Boston in the last 2 months. They're the clear chalk coming out of the Eastern Conference, and I don't know if they've necessarily earned that quite yet. Overall as a team.
Man, you like some upsets. Wow.
We just got through a year where an expansion team had 100 points.
That's crazy.
Nothing makes sense.
That's nuts. Do you like the Kings in Vegas tonight, or you like Vegas to win at home?
I like Vegas, man. They're so good on home ice, and that place is going to be just the best home ice advantage in the league. Based on my experiences in the regular season, I can't even imagine what it's going to be like for the playoffs. And that to me is, we did a ranking on ESPN of the hype ranking, as you mentioned before, of the, you know, the top playoff series. And number one was the Boston-Toronto series for obvious reasons. Number two was this LA-Vegas series. I love the idea of, a playoff newbie, a team that didn't exist last year, going up against a Kings team that just like 3 years ago was in dynasty mode, right? And now they're back on it. They're playing great. They're trying to get back on the throne. And now they've got this sort of geographic rival, this new kid on the block, that's trying to prevent them from doing it. And, you know, the Knights are just one of the best stories in recent memory in sports, probably undercovered by the mainstream, if anything.
100%.
But like but super fun and super exciting. And don't forget, I mean, you know, we're not many months removed from the tragedy in Vegas and the thing that, you know, the Knights players themselves said really bonded them to that community and was one of the main motivating factors in their success on home ice. So, It's going to be a really interesting series, but I actually have Vegas advancing. I don't think Vegas gets in their own heads about how good they are until the second round, and then all of a sudden it kind of becomes real. Like, you can't play with house money when you're 12 wins away from winning the cup, right? Like, but right now I think you still can.
Greg, thanks as always for the time. Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer, ESPN. Check out the podcast at Puck Soup Podcast on Twitter. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, boys.
Yep.
All right, man.
That's good stuff, too.
Greg Ski, as Jason likes to call him. Time to go in the clubhouse with Mike Rizzo. It's presented by Burke and Herbert Bank. Unexpectedly different. Mike, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Keith, how are you?
We're doing good, well. Buddy. How are you?
Awesome.
It got to be awesome after that performance. The last two performances by two studs there at the top of the rotation. This is what you're paying the big bucks for, Mike.
It must really suck to have Max and Strassi on your team.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, it's a great feeling when you can run those two kind of aces at teams. They eliminate losing streaks, and they give you a chance to win each and every time out. And it's as good a 1-2 punch as I've ever had since 2001 when I had Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling with the Diamondbacks. So this is special stuff we're watching.
Mike, I noticed in one of Davey Martinez's post-game pressers, I think it was last night, but it might have been the night before, he was definitely wearing a Washington Capitals lid in support of the Caps about to start their playoff run. Is that an organic thing? Like, has he tried to ingratiate himself with the Capitals since he's been in town, or did somebody from the PR staff just hand it to him before he went up on the podium?
I had one on myself. We had a couple of lids laying around. I'm a big hockey fan. I've seen a lot of Caps games, a lot of Wizards games here in town, and we're definitely rooting for him. You know, Davey's trying to acclimate himself to the city. You know, he's moved here, 12 months a year. He lives here in the Navy Yard area, and he's part of the community. He's going to be here long term, and he's going to embrace everything that's about it, you know.
Mike, game one of the Caps playoff series conflicts with the Nats game, but game two is on Sunday. The Nats play, I believe, at 1:30 on Sunday. Caps drop the puck at 7:30 here in D.C. Do we see a Mike Rizzo appearance at Capital One, or are you on the trip to New York for the Mets series?
I will be on the trip with the Mets series, but we take the train to New York City, and as a possibility, I could go there Monday morning. But you never know. I'd love to. I love playoff hockey. It's awesome, and the Caps are. I've seen them play about six times this year, and I love watching them.
You know, just getting back to Strauss again. So he has another just unbelievable performance last night, and then one of our stud producers over at NBC Sports Washington. Retweeted something that since last year, his ERA since the All-Star break is 1.17. I know you know he's been good. Did you know he'd been that good?
Yeah, I didn't know that exact number, but he's I knew he's been outstanding. And we've said for a long time that this is one of the elite pitchers in all of baseball, and he's a guy that. Again, gives you a chance to dominate a game every time he takes the mound, and he's really done it his whole career. Now he's had some injuries that derailed the greatness, if you will. But this guy's been superior since the day he took the mound against the Pirates, the first time he ever pitched in the big leagues. Mm.
So last night Zimmerman got a triple, drove in a couple with that triple. But Adam Eaton was a late scratch, so I saw he was in the lineup early in the day, and then you guys sent out another email amending that, and Goodwin took his place, and he's going to go to the DL with the ankle. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, last year the horrific injury he had running the bases, he really messed up his knee, tore ligaments and cartilage and that type of thing, but he also turned his ankle quite badly, and it was a high ankle sprain, and that was part of his rehab. He's rehabbed it through it well. There's no floating bodies or chips in the ankle, which is a good thing. But as he was pounding on it and made that slide at home the other day, he aggravated it, and it's kind of a bone bruise that you could play through it, but you'd be at 75-85%. Daniel Murphy played through it the last couple of months of last season, so it's something you could play through. But we figured with the ankle and how that affects you as you deal with your knee. We didn't want him favoring his ankle and doing something different with his stride with his knee. So we felt the prudent thing to be would put him on the DL for 10 days and we'll see where he's at after that. We don't believe this is going to be a long-term thing, but we wanted to be cautious with it because this guy's you've seen him play. This guy's a igniter. He's an energy guy for us. He's a big-time player for us. And he's huge in our plans and a guy that, hits really, really good pitching and a guy who sets the table for, Harp and Zim and Rendon and those guys. So we need this guy healthy in the lineup. And we think that this small 10-day setback will be beneficial in the long run where we have him, throughout the whole season.
Severino's been pretty good. I mean, I think he played in the entire Mets series. He played both games, started both games so far in this series. He's getting on base. He had a couple hits. Against the Mets on April 7th. I think he's had four or five straight games with hits. He's getting on base. What's your assessment of how Severino's been playing, both offensively and defensively?
The defense has never been a question, guys. He's an athletic catcher. You see him bounce around back there. He's as good a blocker as we have. Pitch framer. He can really, really throw. He's got good feet behind the plate. And he's really, really learning to call a good game. He's a guy that studies a lot. Weeders and Henry Blanco have been with this guy since he got to the big leagues, teaching him the art of calling the game and preparing to have the pitchers trust you. And you see, very few shakeoffs from some stud pitchers like Scherzer and Strasburg when they're on a roll and dealing. I think Max mentioned Sevy specifically in his post gamer that they were in great sync. So he's learning that aspect of it. He's a great defender already, and offensively he's come a long way in the last two seasons. He's more selective at the plate. He's got good power, and when he uses the middle of the field, he's a dangerous hitter, and he's a guy that we felt for a long time is our future behind the plate. We didn't want to rush him to the big leagues and have him sit on the bench, but when we got an opportunity for him to play every day in the big leagues, we have to see what we've got there, and he's been very, very good for us so far.
How do you evaluate? Is it too early to hold the Ryan Zimmerman experiment? I know his batting average is low, but he's hit some hard balls. Had a big one last night, obviously, finally, that kind of got down for him, drove in two runs. Is it too early to sort of evaluate his sort of unique approach to spring training, or are you guys comfortable with how it's worked and how he's looked so far?
Well, I'm comfortable with how he looks and how he's worked, and we've seen him work all spring training. I won't evaluate his spring training based on how his season goes at all, because that, to me, they're independent of each other. He got more at bats this spring training than he's got in the last 10 spring trainings that he's had, and he worked extremely hard. He's in great shape. You're right when you say he's hit the ball extremely hard. I think he's had 10 or so at bats where he's got 100-plus exit velocity on balls that were not hits, that were caught. So he's hitting into a little bit of bad luck. You saw his reaction yesterday when he hit that ball really, really hard, and the center fielder just missed it and got a hit finally. He was a little bit relieved because he has been hitting in bad luck, hitting the ball hard. Even in the Atlanta series and the Mets series, he lined out to right and right center two or three times. That's when Zim's starting to get in, starting to go well. But I like his bat speed. The ball's coming off his bat very, very well. And he's a guy that is usually a slow starter, but he's also a guy that could carry it for 3 weeks, and he's done it, many times in his career.
Mike, is today a big start for AJ, just considering how the first one went?
Yeah, I think he it's a big start for him. I mean, he needs to get some confidence. You need to attack the strike zone. I remember talking to you guys last week AJ's got to learn it. This is the big leagues. You got to get guys out on the plate. You can't rely on a lot of chases like you can in Triple A and Double A. These guys know the strike zone. You got to have the good enough stuff to get them out on the plate and be aggressive. You see what aggressiveness does to pitching. It's what it does to your defense when you work fast, throw strikes, and really concentrate on getting ahead of hitters. There's nobody good enough in this league to pitch 1-0 and 2-0 and 3-0 and 3-1 in this league. You've got to get ahead of hitters, because when it's a hitter's count, the batting average goes from the high 100s when you're 1-2 to the high 300s when you're 3-1. So, simple analytics will tell you that when you're ahead of the hitter, you get a much better chance of winning the game, and that's what he has to do.
Was there one theme that plagued Kinsler? Because he had about three very rough outings for him. Or is it just sort of, you know, whatever, early season struggles?
Yeah, I think the moral of that story is he's a sinker ball pitcher. High sinkers tend to go a long way, and you got to sink the ball, keep the ball down in the zone. That's his bread and butter. He's a ground ball guy, gets you a double play. He's not a big strikeout reliever. And when those sinker ball guys, sinker slider guys, when they're throwing fly balls, that's a bad omen. So he needs to sink the ball, keep the ball down in the zone, and attack the hitters. And I think he'll be fine. His velo is there. His spin rate is good. So we're confident that he's going to revert back to the.
I'm sorry, I don't know this. What's the spin rate? How do you guys monitor that? What is that?
Spin rate is something that we judge breaking pitches with, curveball, sliders, and revolutions per second on how the ball leaves the pitcher's hand to the plate. We've got a pitch tracking system that tracks and can gauge the amount of spin per second in my GM box.
I gotta imagine.
You don't watch the film and count them yourself.
You guys have been in my GM box. It's like NASA in there, man.
Dude, that's
so
insane.
High tech stuff. Yep. It's crazy.
Does Strauss have the best spin rate? I would imagine he does.
I would think on his curveball. Yeah. Geo's actually got the best curveball spin rate. And the reliever Lugo for the Mets, I don't know if you remembered him. He's a long reliever. He's got the highest spin rate of a curveball that we've seen so far, like 3,100 revolutions per second. So yeah, it's interesting stuff unless you think too much about it, and then it makes you crazy. So
right.
it's good information.
Just a league-wide question here, quickly before we get to the Burke and Herbert. Are you more surprised by the Mets? I mean, small sample size, I get it. But are you more surprised by the Mets 9-1 start or the struggles of the Dodgers at 4-6 and the Cubs at 5-5?
Probably more surprised at the struggles of those two really good teams. Not that it's worrisome to me, but because at the end of the day they're going to be fine. But not surprised by the Mets. You know, they've got they run four good starters at you in a good veteran waiting lineup, and they've got a good team when they're healthy.
Mike, it's time for the Burke and Herbert Bank fan question of the week. After Max's dominating performance on Monday, we learned he only has five career complete game shutouts. That includes two no hitters. How is that number so low? That's from Carlton in Kensington, our friend.
Well, you know, in this day and age, I think last year, what did four complete games led Major League Baseball? So I think it's the times that we live in. It's a game of specialties, and you're often going out there, throwing 105 to 110 pitches, six and a half, seven innings. And then leaving the eighth and ninth up to your back end elite reliever. I think that's just the way the game has progressed in that rate. And you very rarely see 300 inning pitchers anymore and a bunch of complete games like you did in the past.
Mike, we've met Carlton from Kensington who asked that question. He's a very strange dude. We've met him in appearances. He wears these weird glasses when he sleeps. He's just very weird. But he likes the Nats, though.
Yeah, he loves the Nats. Nats fan.
Then we love him, then.
Yep.
We love
He's
the
a
Nats.
Good dude.
All right. Hey, Mike, the weather's going to turn, man. I think we're going to be 75 degrees maybe Friday, 80 degrees Saturday. I'm going to be there Sunday. It should be warm. It's turned.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. That's fun. It's fun when things turn here in D.C. When the weather gets nice, the fans come out, and it's really enjoyable baseball. So it's been chilly the last couple of weeks, and it's turning. But we're optimistic about when the weather changes, the bats will heat up, and we'll get rolling.
Hey, let's go to the Big Stick after the game on Sunday. Have a beer.
I'll be either at the Caps games as we alluded to earlier, yep. or on the train going to New York City.
Oh, yeah. All right,
Mike. We'll talk
Thank
to you
Mike.
Next week.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you later.
Yep.
Mike Rizzo, general manager.
He doesn't care.
No, he's dialed in.
We're not really being serious, are you?
I mean, I would meet him at the Big Stick if he wanted to. I mean, he's not going to, but I'd meet him at the Big Stick. Have some pops.
Right. My wife wants to do that.
My wife and I are going. My daughters are going too.
He wants to go to the Big Stick with about 6,000 dogs there after the game.
No, but he definitely doesn't want to go with me.
No, that too.
Definitely doesn't want to do that.
Having numbers like Carlton run up to him and ask him questions.
Me at the big stick.
Carlton from Kensington.
I was there,
be there
a few weeks ago.
Believe me, Carlton's a loser.
This is a big stick for a nightcap.
I've met Carlton way too many times.
Eric, how long did it take you to realize that question was about you? Because you didn't flinch at all. You just sat there till the very end.
He doesn't listen.
I asked the question that you were wondering all week.
He's too busy prepping the app for the next segment.
He's not prepping anything.
He's ready. He's dialed in like Mike Rizzo.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.